Hello and welcome to Newsmakers on CHCH Podcast. I'm Louis Butko, and it has been a busy few weeks at the Ontario Legislature, and so today I'm very pleased to be joined by the founder of the most read newsletter at the Pink Palace. That's the Queen's Park Observer, and she's Sabrina Nanji. And Sabrina, I want to get right into it because last night the Transportation Minister decided that they were going to change their mind less than 36 hours after announcing some changes, including the Union Express train. Is this another flip-flop for this PC government?
I think we can definitely call it that. You know, just throw it onto the pile of policy backtracks that we've had over the years from the Ford government. But as you said, 36 hours, I think that's a record for quickest turnaround that we've had so far. But you're right. I mean, essentially, Transportation Minister Pravind Sekharia said that he's heard from people. There was an online petition, almost 6,000 signatures within, you know, a 24-hour period. And he said that he's listening to people and these changes are not going to be happening. Essentially, these are changes to the service on the Up Express, which takes you from Union to Pearson Airport. But this would essentially have made it a longer wait. Instead of the trains coming every 15 minutes, it would be every 30 minutes for Weston, the Weston stop and the Bloor stop in particular. And a lot of people don't just use the Up Express for going to the airport or and downtown, right? Like there's a lot of commuters who just use those stations while they're going to their day-to-day jobs. I mean, if you've taken the TTC, you might be looking for alternatives. And I will say the Up Express, like in my experience, I do see it very busy during the work week. And so this is a policy reversal. And certainly, I think at least for the folks in the West End of Toronto, it's a good one.
Well, if we look at, you know, another flip-flop is how the opposition will frame it. We saw Marit Stiles say that yesterday. The Ford government will say, no, this is us. This is us for the people. We listened to you. We did it on the Greenbelt. We told you we made a mistake. They're both kind of right, no? Like, it is a flip-flop, yes, but they did listen. So do both parties get to claim a little bit of credit, a little bit of success here?
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, both parties are going to spin this, and it just depends on your vantage point of how you see this. I mean, we had NDP leader Marit Stiles, as you said, saying, you know, this is just another flip-flop. What are you guys even doing? She said that this speaks to the Ford government's lack of consultation with the community, that, you know, maybe if they had gone and asked folks in that neighborhood, you know, how would this play out, they would have known from the get-go and maybe not have this, 36-hour negative headline news cycle. But you're right. I think the Ford government has been able to spin this in their favor. But, you know, I guess the big question is, how long is that going to last? How much patience does the public have? I mean, when he reversed those changes to playgrounds during COVID and essentially banned, you know, 12-year-olds from going to play at the park, we saw that reversal. And, you know, I think the reversal was good news. And Ford has said, you know, we heard from the people, we listened, we changed our mind. And isn't that what you want from a government? He has a new ad. You talked about the Greenbelt, right? Right now, you know, very self-promoting ad. We've got by-elections in Milton and Lambton, Middlesex. It's very campaign-style promo ad. And he sort of acknowledges you don't always get it right on the first time. And that seems to be a reference to the Greenbelt. So it definitely seems like they're trying to spin this in their favor like they would. And I do think, though, that after a certain number of backtracks, if they continue on this way, people are going to say, you know, what is this government about? Why are you not consulting? And, you know, a lot of these policy changes seem to be more reversals than actually doing something concrete.
Yeah, the opposition ads seem to be writing themselves these days when it comes to making a decision and then quickly flipping on that decision. What sense do you get? Like, what is it about that pressure? Was it the GTA, do you think? Because, you know, it was so quick, 36 hours between the announcement and the reversal. Sometimes they seem to listen to the people, sometimes they don't. What did you make in this particular circumstance?
Yeah, that's a great question. And like my kingdom to be on the fly in the wall in the transportation minister's office, right? Like this week. But you're right. I think that a lot of it has to do with, well, is this going to be, you know, worth the political fallout? And I think this one seemed like, no, it's not worth it. I mean, cutting transit service, no matter how you look at it, I think especially for someone like Doug Ford, who, you know, transportation is something that's very important to him. And obviously he's got these big legacy projects with the Ontario line. And so I do think that this was maybe something that they saw right away. They nipped it in the bud. It was virtually easy, I guess, for them to sort of direct Metrolinx and make this change and just say, look, the idea was to get faster service to the airport, but obviously it's not going to work for the folks in this neighborhood. And, you know, Ford doesn't really govern in downtown Toronto, right? Like, they don't really have any seats there. But on the outskirts and sort of where we're talking about Weston, there is more conservative support there. I mean, Ford's obviously reigning supreme in Etobicoke and also over in Scarborough as well. So I do think that there are some politics at play here, but this one just seemed like it should have been something that someone, you know, caught before they came out with the announcement. So a lot of speculation, I guess, as to why, you know, this was reversed and maybe not some other unpopular things, but we're only halfway through the mandate. There could be some more reversals down the line.
We talk about the Ford support outside of downtown Toronto, but the GTA and that being such a huge part of his majority government last time around. We've talked about Pragmeet Sakaria. It was a busy Monday for him because he had that GO Train expansion announcement. And then that night, the federal government says, hey, I think we've got a deal here moving forward on the 413. You mentioned legacy projects. The 413, 413, whatever we're going to call it, this is going to be a big one. Just how significant was that announcement on Monday between the feds and the province?
This is a huge win for the Ford government. You're right. Highway 413 is a legacy project for Ford. I know there's been a lot of controversy around it. Opposition critics are against it. You know, there's been some community pushback, environmental pushback, but this is a signature piece from Doug Ford. And you know, he promised this during the campaign. I think this helped him actually nab some seats and certainly votes in the 905 area, the GTA, because we know there's a lot of motorists commuting. And while you know, there have been alternative suggestions, like Green Leader Mike Schreiner is saying, start subsidizing trucks to kind of ease traffic on the 401 and the 407. There have been alternate suggestions, obviously, to the 413, but this is something Doug Ford is sticking with, and clearly, you know, he won that majority. Voters knew this was coming, and so this is clearly a very significant win for the PCs. Essentially, the roadblock is cleared, and Highway 413, the construction can go ahead. The feds and Ontario have struck this working group that's going to sort of look at the environmental impact of this rather than have that full-on impact assessment that had slowed down construction. But this isn't like, you know, a pure kumbaya moment with the feds and the province. We heard them again in question period today railing against the carbon tax. So if you thought that this was, you know, the beginning of the bromance between Trudeau and Ford, it's not. not quite there yet.
Yeah, I mean, both of them are kind of in a really interesting spot, obviously, with both releasing their budgets. And I know down at Queen's Park, they had a lot to say about the federal budget, and they seem to be concerned about that deficit growing. Well, not really too concerned about their deficit growing. You mentioned the carbon tax. Let's stick with that, because these PCs have dubbed Bonnie Crombie, the Liberal leader, the queen of the carbon tax, and it seems no matter where they go, they're throwing that at her. Todd Smith was at an announcement in Niagara yesterday, had a reason to bring it up. Are they threatened by Bonnie Crombie at this point? Because, you know, they're going after her every time. How do they see her at this point right now?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, every opportunity they get, they are hammering Bonnie Crombie. I mean, Bonnie Crombie says that they're obsessed with her, and then you'd believe them, because it comes up almost every time, and you can see that she really can get under Doug Ford's skin. This is something that, you know, actually helped Bonnie Crombie, I think, win the Liberal leadership back in December, because she really can go toe-to-toe with him. But I think that this is tricky here, because the Ford Conservatives are spending a lot of money taking out ads, calling her the queen of the carbon tax, and really forced her into this wedge, right? Because we know the federal carbon tax is very unpopular right now, and the PCs are hoping to capitalize on that. Now, Bonnie Crombie, you know, has been forced, I guess, to come out and say she's not going to bring in a provincial carbon tax. But the question is, what would you bring in? She says she struck this climate policy working group to hear from experts, come up with some solution that doesn't include a tax. But as we know, the reason why Ontario has this levy in the first place is because Doug Ford scrapped Kathleen Wynne's cap and trade program. It doesn't have a levy of its own. Of course, there is an industrial carbon price in Ontario that Doug Ford brought in, sort of separate from what Ottawa has imposed on us. But of course, this is just, a big political game. And the number one rule in politics is you've got to define yourself before your opponents do. So I think Doug Ford here, we're not really going to see him let up. This could be a long 2 years until 2026. And really now Bonnie Crombie is going to have to mount her counterattack and start touring the province, introducing herself to folks beyond just the 905, which, as we've said, is very vote rich and where people already know her and where she's fairly popular. But you're right, this is something that could be damaging to Bonnie Crombie if she doesn't sort of mount her counterattack sooner rather than later.
You mentioned 2026, and we've gotten some big announcements when it comes to financing. I mentioned that announcement yesterday, Todd Smith in Niagara, $1 billion for the refurbishment of the Sir Adam Beck Generating Station. Steve Paikin, obviously, of TVO, knows Queen's Park pretty well. He wrote this week about watching for early signs of an election call. They're a majority government. It would be kind of silly if they did something too drastic too early, but there is a looming OPP investigation into the Greenbelt. That might be something they want to get in front of. How likely do you see an election being called before 2026? Is this anywhere on the possibility?
I mean, I read that column from Steve Paikin, and I love Steve Paikin. You're right. He's like inimitable godfather of Ontario political journalism, right? But I have to say, maybe this is just personally for my own sanity that I don't want an early election. But I don't know if you're right. I don't know if it's going to happen. But all those signs and hints are kind of there. Maybe that has to do with the fact that we're in the middle of a by-election campaign. I guess back-to-back by-election campaigns in Milton and Lambton. But we have seen Doug Ford sort of go into campaign mode, and he said it himself. He goes from one campaign to the other. He is someone who loves to hit the hustings. He loves going out there, taking selfies with folks, doing the campaign videos, kissing babies, shaking hands, and we've sort of seen that a little bit from him. I think a big part of that is because there are by-elections. A big part of that is because there's a new Liberal leader, Bonnie Crombie, and we have seen Bonnie Crombie, at least in the polls, take some support from the NDP, where Doug Ford is still sitting pretty at mid 30s, even pushing 40% support, whereas the Liberals are gaining steam, the NDP are losing. And so I don't know if Doug Ford really wants to rock the boat right now. He is comfortable with his majority. The other parties aren't even close. And while he might want to get ahead of an RCMP investigation, they don't really have any control on the timing of that, right? That's still going. And while that could be really damaging, depending on, what comes of it, I don't know if they really want to preempt that. And of course, a sitting government dealing with a damning RCMP, potentially damning RCMP investigation or results of it, I think would be just as problematic than if it was during an election campaign. So I don't know if it's going to actually happen. I probably personally just hope it doesn't happen, but it always feels like, especially when you've got someone like Doug Ford in power at Queen's Park, that he's always in campaign mode, and that is kind of his element and what he's good at, right? He's good at winning elections, clearly.
Yeah, ultimate retail politician. He's one of those people that no matter who you talk to across spectrums, they always seem to get, he seems like the guy you can go get a beer with. And like you said, that's his strength, and he knows how to play it well. I want to get just quickly on Paul Calandra. Last week, there was a bit of a moment between the NDP. Merritt Stiles had a pretty good line with the jail cells, this counting dorm rooms and long-term care homes. Just, is this something that's going to come back at them? Moving the goalposts, adjusting the score in their favor. Is this something? Because we've heard 1.5 million homes so many times, and now we're starting to see that shift, it seems. There's nothing we could have done about it. It was the Fed's fault. Have you felt that these goalposts have been moving when it comes to this pledge of 1.5 million homes by 2030?
Yeah, I mean, student dorms, long-term care beds, and yeah, you're right, the NDP is making jokes. Are they going to count tents as this too? But, jokes aside, I do think that the public, I don't know if the public is going to be so upset by like the specific numbers here, right? 1.5 million homes is a huge ambitious project. Our housing starts up until now show that we're already off track. It does feel like they're moving the goalposts, and opposition critics are saying they're just padding their numbers about the goal. But at the end of the day, you know, you hear these stories of people not being able to afford rent or even find a place. Housing is not attainable in any sense, I think, right now. And so, you know, the Ford government can maybe, you know, play with the numbers a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, in 2026, if we're still having the same conversation that we're having about housing, I don't know if they're really going to be able to get away with it with the public. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about fourplexes, four stories. The Ford government has ruled out fourplexes. My sources are saying they're really seeing, you know, the polling that suggests they that most of Ontario, and especially in key ridings, that they're still NIMBYs. And we have seen some public polling to suggest that too, that people believe we need more housing, just not in my community, or my community already has enough housing. So I do think they are moving the goalposts. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, obviously students need places to stay. And so I don't know if it's really going to, you know, work against them in the way the opposition is playing it. But at the end of the day, like, we kind of need homes for the rest of us too, not just students and the elderly. So I think, you know, they can count whatever they want. As long as there's homes for everyone who needs it, that's really what it's going to come down to.
Sabrina, some tense moments at Queen's Park yesterday when police were called for a suspicious package that was determined to be gravy. Do you anticipate some sort of gravy ban happening at Queen's Park in the next few weeks here? Because there's some tense moments yesterday, for sure.
I think that would be like just like treason, right? Because like, have you ever had a poutine without gravy? Like this, the ban would not happen. But yes, you know, kind of a tense moment that turned out to... everyone's safe and everything was fine. Mm-hmm. So I guess we can have a little laugh about it now. But you're right. This whole gravy fiasco, I think maybe John Fraser, liberal House leader, or I should say legislative leader, sort of sparked this. He very cheekily sent over a can of gravy to the PC benches to illustrate, you know, criticism that the Premier's office, according to the Sunshine List, has been growing and salaries have been growing. And so I guess someone thought it would be funny and pointed to send a message to Doug Ford, and they ended up sending a packet of instant gravy, which was suspicious. We had cops there, a partial evacuation over at McDonald Block, the bureaucrat and Premier's office buildings across from the legislature. So I don't know if we're going to have a gravy ban. I hope not. But I think, you know, maybe write in, sign a petition, send a photo of yourself with the gravy to Doug, and that might be a more effective way to get your point across.
That is some good advice. Sabrina, I know you're very busy, so I appreciate you making the time. Great to catch up with you. We'll have to do it very soon. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. My thanks to Sabrina Nanji for joining me today. You can check her work. It's the Queen's Park Observer. Make sure to subscribe. The most read newsletter when it comes to Queen's Park gets you everything you need to know going down at the Pink Palace. So my thanks to her for joining me. And my thanks to you as well, because we could not do the show without your support. Make sure to like and subscribe to CHCH Podcast so you never miss an episode of this show or any of the other great shows we have for you, including a brand new episode of the Trending Now podcast, which you can catch every Friday with me and with Bob O'Neill. You can catch Sportsline every day as well. So chch.com/podcast is where you can find that. My thanks to Mike Corson for directing today's show. And one more time, thank you for joining us. From all of us here at CHCH, I'm Louis Beckel. Have a great day.